The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So the flavors of the week continue. We are going through some of the classical Indian rasa or savors or flavors that teachings can have. And I want to bring in one more dimension today, as we've gotten pretty far into this week, which is noticing if there are certain flavors that we're talking about that you rarely experience, or that you have a sense like, oh, that's not that important, or I don't know about that one, something like that. Or what is that? I never even thought about that one. And maybe it would be interesting to open to some of these other flavors the way we might try a different food, spice up our practice with an unusual flavor. Because all of these are present in the suttas. If we look for them, we may just not have noticed if we're not really attuned to that flavor. So today, we are looking at wonder and amazement. We could also say awe. It's interesting that these are recognized in the classical Indian cultural understanding as being important flavors to have in art and also in spiritual teachings. I think it's an ingredient that is sometimes missing here in the West. I know not everyone listening is from the West, but at least I'm aware of much of that culture in Buddhism. And, you know, we tend to have kind of prefer rationality, wonder and amazement. But the Buddha was very clear that the Dharma, the deep Dharma, is beyond the thinking mind. He said that liberation is unattainable by mere reasoning. So let's draw out some meaning of that from the discourses of the Buddha. There is a story of a time that the Buddha was living with an attendant named Meghiya. And you may know that Ananda was often the Buddha's attendant, and that's true, but he actually came a little bit later. The Buddha had some other attendants before Ananda. And at this time, he was just living with his attendant, Meghiya, just the two of them. And Meghiya asks permission to go meditate alone in a lovely mango grove. And the Buddha tries to dissuade him from doing that alone. But Meghiya is very insistent, and he asks three times, which usually means that the Buddha has to comply. And eventually the Buddha gives in because, you know, Meghiya is so eager to practice. How can he object to that? So he sends him off. But Meghiya did not have an easy time. His mind was taken over by sensual thoughts and thoughts of ill will and thoughts of harming. His mind kind of went crazy. And what's of interest here is that his response. The sutta says that in his mind he said, "This is truly astounding and amazing. I have gone forth out of faith from the household life into homelessness. Yet I am still stalked by these three kinds of bad, unwholesome thoughts, sensual thoughts, thoughts of ill will, and thoughts of harming." So how about that response? He says, it is astounding and amazing that his mind is doing all of this. I don't hear that very often from meditators here. Usually it's more like, oh, I'm a terrible meditator. My mind is out of control. Or it even goes farther to, I'm a terrible person to have thoughts like this or to be so bad at my meditation. How awful. So maybe we could try meeting experience more like Meghiya. When the mind is wild, you can be amazed. Truly, this mind has a mind of its own, doesn't it? It can produce all kinds of stuff. We touched a little bit into this yesterday, the unpredictable quality of the mind, when we talked about humor, you know, like Gil thinking, I wonder if there's a body under that tarp. So amazement is kind of related, can also be a helpful response when our mind is doing whatever it's doing. Wow, how amazing. So that's one side of amazement and wonder, one that I think is pretty accessible. But in the suttas, of course, there are also instances where advanced meditators display what are called supernormal powers, the ability for the mind to manipulate the physical world in unusual ways. There are discussions of levitation, walking through walls, these kinds of things, or the ability to see very deeply with the mind, beyond the way we normally are able to experience things, like being able to see sometimes what other people are thinking, or being able to see our past lives. These kinds of powers are said to come about, let's say, from developing strong concentration. And we don't emphasize them here in the West, and the Buddha absolutely forbade casual use of them for his followers. So, they're not really emphasized as aims in the Buddha's teachings. But if we read the suttas honestly, again, they are sometimes strategically used to shock people into presence or to evoke inspiration. There's a case where the Buddha uses his power to prevent someone from being able to catch up with him, even though the person is running as fast as they can and the Buddha is just walking at normal speed. And this causes the person to stop short, that they, that obviously something different is going on there. And because of, the Buddha showing his power that way, the person stops and actually listens to the Buddha and give him a teaching, which turned out to be crucial for him. So, the Buddha was strategic in using that ability. There are also cases where quite a few, where the Buddha is asked or even sometimes spontaneously tells the rebirth destination of someone who has just died. And he even explains why he's doing that. He doesn't just do it so that people will be amazed or so that people will, whatever. But he's very clear about why he's doing that. He says there are people who are inspired by things that are lofty. And when he unpacks that, it's that if people know that someone has attained a certain stage of liberation with their death and is reborn in a good destination, they might be inspired to practice while they're still alive here. Or just, we can even see simpler versions of this, maybe in everyday life here. There are people who are inspired that people go on long retreats. Just knowing that somebody is going on a 3-month retreat. I've known people who were really inspired to know that. They weren't going to do it necessarily, but we offer that in our tradition at IMS every year. There's a 3-month retreat. It's always full. That can be really inspiring. So, talking about kind of the elevated mind states that are possible has a place on the path. There's also a discourse that's called Wonderful and Marvelous. And in this discourse, Ananda is recounting a number of the wonderful and marvelous things about the Buddha's past life in the Tusita heaven before he was born here, and then also coming into his mother's womb to be born here, and the birth itself. There's kind of a mythology around all of this. And what's interesting in this sutta, Wonderful and Marvelous, is that the Ananda explains all of these things in the Buddha's presence, saying that he heard all of these things from the Blessed One's own lips, and the Buddha doesn't object. So I think we're to take them as true. He says things like, when the Buddha was born, there were flowers blooming out of season and streams of water rained down from heaven, things like that. So, you know, we can maybe take this metaphorically, or who knows? We weren't there. But an interesting thing. So all of this is kind of there in the sutta, and we're, you know, the Buddha's tacitly at least agreeing with it. And then the Buddha listens to this long recitation of, you know, miracles without comment. And then he says to Ananda, "That being so, Ananda, remember this too as a wonderful and marvelous quality of the Tathagata," meaning the Buddha. "Here, for the Tathagata, feelings are known as they arise, as they are present, and as they disappear. Perceptions are known as they arise, as they are present, and as they disappear. And thoughts are known as they arise, as they are present, and as they disappear." So it seems that after all these miracles, which apparently are true, the Buddha also really values the simple knowing of one's mind. That is the genuine miracle, if you will. And he meant it, actually, even for himself. There's a sutta from just after the Buddha's awakening where the Buddha realizes that it's, in his words, "it's painful to dwell without reverence and deference." And he's just been awakened, right? So you'd think he wouldn't need that kind of thing. But he looks around for something to be awed by, some person, and he doesn't see any being who's superior in knowing than himself. So he decides to revere the Dharma. How about that? So even the Buddha wanted to revere something. So he decides to revere the natural laws of how things work. Wow, it's amazing. This is a simple and natural element of the universe that could evoke wonder and awe for us. How amazing that this is, there's this mind, there's all these things we can know about the body and the mind, and there's consciousness knowing it that we didn't create. Wow. I originally studied science in my earlier life, and I was drawn to it largely because of the feelings of awe and wonder that I had as a child, imagining the universe and my place in it. Nature is quite wonderful and marvelous. And I hope we don't lose that in our practice and in the little minutiae of trying to get our life right and figure out our past and our relationships. Nature is so wonderful. The mind is amazing. So we need this in our practice. We need to bring in inspiration, faith, juice of some kind. Wonder can evoke joy, can enliven and lift the heart, can enable us to move forward when we have no idea how. You know, we can get into situations where we don't know how to go forward. Life can be like that. It can bring something large. And then we might really need something bigger than us, our small self, so worried about getting everything together. Open the mind to the wonder, the larger picture, the sense of the wholeness, not as a philosophy, but as a flavor, as an emotional tone that's useful for us. We don't have to make it into a big thing. And then we're gripping onto it. Just be with it, feel it, use it so that the mind can become unstuck. So this is my suggestion for today, the flavor of the day. I hope you're getting a sense as we go through these flavors of the breath that's offered in the teachings, the breath that's possible in our heart and mind. So be well. See you tomorrow.